Hello and welcome to the Guardian Film Show, another week of sleaze, scandal and heartbreak at the cinema. So no wonder Zam Brooks, Peter Bradshaw and Catherine Short have stayed on holiday. There's a few of us left here with strong constitutions, so let's find out what we have to stomach. Coming up on this week's show, world champion skateboarder Taz Pappas spikes success with excess in documentary All This Mayhem. Mad Men star John Slattery raises a glass to the beery, teary denizens of God's Pocket, and Ben Whishaw loses a lover and gains a friend in drunk-on-tragedy drama Lilting. But first, the headiest of concoctions. Welcome to New York is an Abel Ferreira film inspired by the DSK scandal and starring Gérard Depardieu as a powerful man who can't help but follow his urges. Gird yourself, here comes grunting, groping Gérard in all his naked glory.
Can you tell me what your problems are?
Did not read the newspaper or watch TV.
Welcome to New York has Depardieu as Devereaux, a French banker, undressed and undone after being charged with sexual assault on a maid in a Manhattan hotel. Mr. Devereaux is nearing the end of a moving walkway, and it drops him off in hell.
Is it worth that journey?
Oui.
Joining me now are The Guardian's Andrew Pulver and The Hollywood Reporter-writer Leslie Felperin. Leslie, wow, I guess.
Yeah, really impressive. It's kind of an amazing mess. I think, you know, you have to kind of judge it on a number of different standards. Like, as an Abel Ferrara film, I think it's one of his better in a long time. I mean, I love some of his early work, Bad Lieutenant, you know, going back to Ms. 45. I think lately he's been very ropey, but this is kind of him back on form. Then judging it as a Gérard Depardieu film, I mean, again, one of his, you know, a real comeback for him. He hasn't made a really fine performance. It's written certainly very naked in every sense, literal and figurative. So impressive for that. As a film about a kind of quasi-docudrama thing, maybe a little disappointing, I felt. I mean, it's such an interesting subject, such a meaty subject, one the newspapers like our own have covered in great detail, that I felt a little sort of frustrated and slightly unsatisfied as a kind of backstory, as a kind of getting you to understand the case way. But yeah, I mean, it's certainly lurid and spicy and actually quite competently made, although it does have its weak spots. I thought some of the acting wasn't always great.
For me, the whole thing is an extraordinary creation, and in some ways it's the ultimate Abel Ferrara film. He is disguising it that it's not saying it's about Dominique Strauss-Kahn, it's saying it's a sort of thinly veiled portrait of somebody who happens to extremely resemble him and what happened to him and what he did, or what he's supposed to have done. I mean, Strauss-Kahn's never been convicted, as far as I understand anything, so...
Whereas the film's quite specific that it is
a rape. And it sort of portrays the scene, the big scene, very clearly, saying this guy has committed a sexual assault.
The question becomes, you know, if you try to take the whole issue of whether or not it's a good piece of reportage, which it's even pretending to be, is it entertaining as a film? And I would say yes, it is. Although, you know, it is quite softcore porn, actually, and so it kind of tests your how much you like. You know, some people love it, but you know, it is pretty softcore.
Yeah,
isn't
I mean,
it?
There is a lot. But for me, that's sort of part of what makes it so extraordinary that you have these. You know, the first half an hour of the film is just basically a continuous series of revolving door orgies where one lot of prostitutes are sent out on the street, another one comes up in the lift, and you know, it just sort of nothing happens for you know. Normally, the first half hour of a film, you know, there's a bit of a story and things get underway and characters come, but this is basically, you know, the Devereaux character turns up in New York and then just proceeds to spend half an hour, almost in real time, I suppose, just sort of cavorting with prostitutes
which in some cases isn't very long because he's very quick.
Yeah,
he's like bang, 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 and it's done. You know,
but also just makes the editing.
But what's interesting about the film, I think, is that although there's a lot of this sort of fantasy type filmmaking, you know, softcore fantasy filmmaking. I mean, it's all shot in these kind of deluxe hotels with this beautiful lighting, a lot of chiaroscuro. You know, you don't often Depardieu's face is in shadow and all this sort of thing. Very beautiful. And then it's intercut with very long, drawn out, kind of brutally realistic scenes of what it's like to be booked by the police in the hotel. You know, he's taken into custody in the airport, and there's just a long, boring scene where he's just being manhandled by the transit cops and then taken to NYPD jail and just sits, and it just goes on and on and on. And it's quite a very, very interesting counterpoint, I think. And it works very, you know, it's not, the film is not just a sort of one of those sort of Channel 5 kind of softcore films where you can tell the sort of filmmakers themselves are indulging in some sort of fantasy themselves. So I think that's where, for me, the film works. It's not just a sort of excuse for Ferrara just to sort of film a lot of young lovelies without much on.
I took that as it's not just a celebration of bad behaviour, it's about sex addiction as well, right? Yeah. It is about an idea that this guy can't help himself. Even he, you know, he's morally reprehensible, but he's also addicted to this lifestyle and to how he behaves. And that, to me, is the film's saving grace in many ways. It's not just cheap and titillating. It has got a message behind it.
And there is that extraordinary scene where where Depardieu, the character, is strip-searched. It goes on at excruciating length. Somebody who clearly is physically unable to really tie their own shoes and stuff like that. And for a film to show that at that length, you have to say it is trying to make that point in saying that these are people, that this is somebody who's kind of imprisoned by their own body and their own desires. Really.
How much is it talking about Depardieu rather than Devereaux?
I think quite a bit. I mean, I think he is a man of great appetites, and as you can see the evidence of it in the film. I mean, I'm not one to talk, but you know, and it's very brave of him. I mean, there's, you know, his body has this kind of incredibly impressive, massive girth. He looks like sort of Rodin's sculpture of Balzac, you know, this, and to expose himself like that is amazing. You can't ignore the fact that in some ways it's as much as it's a portrait of Depardieu, I think it's also a portrait of Ferrara himself, a man who's also struggled with his addictions and his demons. Indeed, has made a film called The Addiction, but you know, understand that. And so I think there's a really interesting three-way going on between, you know, intellectual or sort of spiritual three-way, as opposed to the literal ones you see in the films, between Strauss-Kahn, Depardieu, you know, the fictional character, and Ferrara himself. I guess that makes it a four-way, but...
Yeah, why do you do all this fucking?
Would you prefer play golf?
Hello, housekeeping.
Welcome to New York, proof that whatever you think of him, Gerard Depardieu has got some balls. Next, let's take a hard right into God's pocket. This is the directorial debut of Mad Men star John Slattery, and it stars Philip Seymour Hoffman as a Havergo detective sent out by his wife to investigate the suspicious death of her son. Christina Hendricks plays mum on this one, and I met her earlier this week to talk about the film.
The working men of God's pocket are simple men. They work, marry, and have children. And until recently, they die like everyone else.
22-year-old construction worker was killed yesterday when he slipped and fell to his death. Leon Hubbard didn't slip on nothing.
Something happened to Leon over at that job. Something nobody's told us yet.
The character of Jeannie that I played was an insider who always thought she would get out. Always sort of had bigger plans for herself, but never really did much to accomplish it.
Can I help you?
I'm Richard Shelburne of the Daily Times.
Sorry for your loss. Is the body messed up?
It's just the back of his head.
It's a rough community, and it is every man for himself. And yet all these people are sort of proud and protective of their space, too. But it's harsh, and it is sort of, you have to protect yourself because no one else is really going to do it for you.
People are good.
Where did he find his body in the street, Mickey?
Leon was in the truck.
With me.
He was separated from me. I knew that would upset you.
Andrew, what did you find in God's Pocket?
Good question. This is adapted from a novel by Pete Dexter, who also wrote the novel that The Paperboy was based on, which came out a couple of years ago. And I have to say, you couldn't find two more different treatments of the same novelist's work. Where The Paperboy was a really lurid, florid Baroque, this is very dour, very downbeat. It's about a very enclosed community, and I personally found something sort of a little airless about it, that it was very claustrophobic. It's a very actory sort of film, and it's directed obviously by an actor, and you sort of get the sense that the actors are not exactly being indulged, but they're very much prioritised. It's one of these films that really deep down pay an homage to this blue-collar American world that I don't know whether it exists anymore, but it seems to sort of belong in the 70s and 80s in a way.
Leslie, I think it's one of those criticisms that goes both ways, but I quite like the farce of it, and I like the stereotyped view of a blue-collar neighbourhood. I felt like they were almost taking the mick out of the whole idea that you can be proud of that kind of community. I mean, yeah. How did you respond to it?
I thought it really picked up. I mean, it was really quite dour to begin with. I mean, you sort of start, you know, there's a very dramatic scene where the young man dies and you're sort of actually rooting for him to die because he's a horrible racist, you know, noxious little twerp. And so I was like, yeah, great. but then the reaction to, you know, this full-on tragedy, I think Christina Hendricks is very good in it. I think it's a film is perhaps colored by, and there's a certain dourness goes with it, is the knowledge that this was one of Philip Seymour Hoffman's last performances.
His last starring role, right?
I think along it's his with last the most wanted role, man. Yeah. I think yeah. There's a couple of films are yet to come over here that he was in, but this was like, I think this was the last one to be seen before he died, you know, which it showed in Sundance, and he died a month later. That colors it a lot. And then it becomes so kind of farcical at the end. I mean, that's when it really picked up, and I think it found its tone. And I think Slattery does that particularly well. I can't remember. I should have researched it before I came on the show. That shows you how lazy I am. But, you know, which episodes of Mad Men he directed. But he's done about 5 episodes of Mad Men, and I can remember, you know, checking. Always look at the credits of Mad Men and say, oh yeah, he did that one. That was really good. You know, and some of the best ones. You know, he does have a really good touch, and I think. Not surprising, it is a really strong cast, and I think Andrew's quite right that it is kind of an actor's film, it's maybe slightly indulgent in that. But there was, I liked it, and I liked that kind of very lightened way that it sort of suggested it's the 70s. You almost spot it now because no one has a mobile phone, and it's just, you know, there's...
Everyone's wearing beige,
but it wasn't too heavily done. It wasn't like it's the 70s and big, you know, bold graphic font.
They didn't go for a disco.
No, they didn't go for disco and stuff like that. And, you know, having spent some time in towns like that, I thought it got the atmosphere really well. You know, when I was, you know, a kid in the 70s, I remember those kind of really grotty, closed-in sort of communities. And I think it captures the humor, but it dances just on that little cusp between caricature and characterization. And, it's good. I mean, you know, whether or not it's you know, will we be talking about it in a year's time? I'm not sure.
What's that idea of the outsider and the idea that you can pretend to be someone who's part of a community, but if you're not born there, best of luck to you, but you're never going to make it, right?
Yeah, that's which you find still in lots of towns, especially here in England, you know.
Yeah.
As I'm living in Norfolk, so too, I know that mentality well. But, you know, Norfolk,
never going to be one of us.
Yeah, Norfolk, where I live in Norfolk, is much nicer than God's Pocket. But that it captured that well, and just, you know, yeah, that sort of the... And the dissolute journalists, you know.
I don't know what they're talking about.
No, exactly. Well, I don't think that culture exists anymore, that someone can be kind of like that slack and turn in the same column 3 years in a row. You know, I mean, none of us would still be in a job if we got away with that. It's like, it almost made me feel nostalgic for the good old days where people had a job for life in journalism.
Cue something in the comments now where they paste three years worth.
Yes, exactly. They'll catch us out now, I know.
We'll leave it there.
What you got to worry about is making sure that everything is all right Saturday. And then you get your money.
Sure, Mick. Sure.
Yeah. Don't look at me like that, Jack.
What are you talking about? Look at you.
Don't look at me like that.
The late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman in God's Pocket there. Now, enough sleaze and enough smut. Let's have something with some feeling. Perhaps too much. This is Lilting.
I'm looking for a Miss Jun Tan. Hello, Jun.
How do you know Jun?
I'm a friend of her son's.
I'm sorry.
Lilting, in which grief brings together a Chinese immigrant and the boyfriend of her dead son. Cheng Pei Pei plays the heartbroken mum, talking to the ghost of a son she didn't understand. Ben Whishaw is the boyfriend, trying to bridge a connection.
He was my only child.
He was my life. He was my...
I tried telling her. My heart was pounding so fast.
Leslie, I've got to say, I found myself lilting into a slumber this one a little bit.
Really?
Yeah.
I love this movie. I was really touched by it. I found out I cried at the end. Maybe I'm a big softy, but I thought there was something really tender about it.
I think it was all the ghosts.
Yeah, that's a really hackneyed device, but yeah. I thought they actually handled it quite well we've seen it a lot, and I just like the way it used space. I mean, on a very formal level, I just like, there's a beautiful shot at the end where they kind of, it's all done in camera, where they just move the camera around, and you see the characters, apparently they did it by just having the actors quickly change costumes, so you see them all dancing with each other, and I don't know, I think maybe it's because it's something very personal for me, having recently lost my mother, who was like this character moved into a home and was struggling with memory issues. I found anything really to do with aging, dying parents kind of gets me instantly. But then on top of it, I just thought the performance was fantastic. I mean, Ching Pei Pei is great. She's, you know, an actress I don't know that well. Of course, I saw her in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, but where she plays a jade warrior or something like that. But she was great in this and really very beautifully underplayed. I mean, it's... The outfit that made it is called Microwave, and it's all tiny, tiny, low-budget films. And there is a quality. It's also BBC that put some money into it so that you feel a little bit like this is one of those rather good BBC teledramas, possibly. But it is actually, I thought, just really elegantly made. Ben Whishaw is fantastic as the brother. Just really touching. I have a real soft spot for him. And even like just the scenes where he's lolling about in bed and he's remembering his times with his dead lover, and you're thinking it's a flashback or is it a fantasy? I like the way that was handled. And it was quite erotic and quite beautiful and touching. And yeah, you know, I keep saying beautiful and touching. It just, I actually found it really, really moving. It really worked for me. And I can understand some people, it won't be for them. I'm welling up even to talk about it. I'm a big softie, but I liked it.
I think that doe-eyed intensity was the thing that did it for me. I couldn't watch it in all seriousness and take it seriously. What did you think, Andrew?
I have to say, I found it a little curate's eggy, and there were some things about it I found very affecting, and other things I found a bit difficult to sort of to enjoy, really, or to like or to love. There was just something a bit sort of saintly about the way they sort of dealt with their characters, and it just did feel like a soap opera to me a lot of time, just a not particularly imaginatively filmed. You know, in a small, you know, I can understand the limitations. It's in this sort of, mostly takes place in this care home. Clearly the director was aiming a bit of a Wong Kar-wai kind of feel. And I have to say, I don't really think it sort of got there myself. As I said, I enjoyed some, you know, the sort of tenderness, particularly of the relationship with the mother and her dead son. I don't know. It was kind of a bit up and down for me.
I know you miss him. I don't know what to do. I miss him tremendously.
That's Lilting, and let's roll on into our final act. In the mid-90s, Taz and Ben Pappas challenged Tony Hawk to be the world champion vert skater. All This Mayhem tells the story of the brothers and how they both tumbled into drug addiction. I met Taz and director Eddie Martin at this year's Sheffield Dockfest.
Growing up, it was pretty hectic. We're always looking for a rush.
No, definitely marketing the pirate lifestyle. Absolutely. Because a lot of young skaters go on that, you know, trajectory, don't they? Where it's, they start young, they're wild pros, and then it all goes
pear-shaped. And then they, you know, spat out the other end. And that's a big part too why I wanted to do this, was that's just a crap way to live, you know. I'd attack everything like I would skating, everything in life. A lot of athletes who are really good, they're the same, you know. It's like they're just obsessed, you know. They just want it. But it can cause problems in other areas of life.
It turned ugly really fast.
Turned into like a personal war.
I was forced to face my issues.
You reap what you sow, pretty much karma.
You never thought that one of your good friends could do that?
It was full-blown mayhem.
Leslie, incredible story this. Do you think the film does it justice?
I guess it does. I don't really know the whole story.
Do you think the film shows you the whole story? I wasn't certain about that from the start.
I'm sure that well, given Taz Pappas features so heavily in it and is, you know, one of the major survivors of the events told, I don't want to give it away to anyone who didn't, like me, didn't know exactly, had never heard of them before. I'm sure it probably pulled their punches a little bit about some of his excesses. Although, you know, it mentions that he could be a right dick sometimes. And he was a very colourful character from a rough, very rough childhood. You know, it sounds like came from basically an abusive childhood. You know, he talks about a lot of physical violence, domestic violence going on in his home between his parents. And so to have that much success that young and suddenly have that much money and to just, you know, be pretty much kind of an emancipated minor at the age of 16 living in the States, he sounded like he had a very explosive temper. So But he's a reformed character, and good on him. Good on him. He looks like a very charismatic, likable guy. I had never heard of him before. I'd heard of Tony Hawk because I have to confess I've seen a couple of skateboarding documentaries, and I felt a little bit like they're all kind of this same story. You know, this phenomenal success. In fact, a lot of sports movies are a similar kind of story.
And even this one is for a while, right? I mean, there's a good 45 minutes of conventional skate doc, everything's gnarly, we're having a great time, before you get into the flip side of it.
What's really interesting, I actually find this from a completely cinematic point of view, is that you know, it's a bit like capturing the Friedmans. It was like there's a sort of given that there was so much footage to choose from. It's like, you know, I went actually with my kids to a park in London the other day, and there were people skateboarding, and everyone was filming, you know, with their phones and stuff like that. And it's like the kind of home cinema revolution or the home filming revolution of the early 90s kind of started with these sort of sports of people kind of constantly waiting to capture the moment where someone wipes out or does something totally amazing or whatever. So I thought that was really interesting. Just that there's all these different kinds, and you sort of see this evolution through the film of the different textures of digital video and home video. You know, like from the kind of VCR stuff of the little kind of time code stamped on it, going up to getting more and more refined and better quality. But you see the kind of evolution there, and that was kind of interesting. And there was a lot of that. You know, wasn't it gnarly? And then you get onto this, you know, a bit, in a way, like Capturing the Friedmans, this really sort of very dark story. What happens and how the two brothers both completely lose it. But then, you know, bless them, good luck to them. It's very sad, but so I feel like I've seen this kind of sports documentary rise and fall and then rise again kind of trajectory a million times in documentaries. But, you know, it all depends on whether or not you find these characters engaging and whether or not you find the sport engaging and, you know, the studs they do. And, you know, even as a complete skating newbie, I have no idea what they're doing and why it's so great. But, you know, it was, you know, you can't fail but to be impressed by these flips they're doing off the vertical ramps.
It had a similar arc to me to, like, Lucy Walker's The Crash Reel, which told the story of a guy who similarly had a terrible accident and then comes back again from the edge of despair, but somehow less satisfying. I didn't know if that was because, to me, the richness in Tass was his upbringing and the fact that he was quite so wild, and that's why he was such a great skater. Mm. And as you get towards the end of the film, there's this feeling that he's suddenly changed and that maybe Christianity or rehabilitation has helped him become an utterly different person. And ironically enough, you'd lose some of the interest in the character because of that.
Yeah, and you know, he was just very physically scarred by the whole experience. I mean, he really... I was amazed. I guess it's okay, it's probably part of skating lore, where he wins the championship and he's actually broken a rib and he takes on the great Tony Hawk. And I love that part of it, even, you know, as a kind of expat American, I love to see the arrogant Americans getting their faces rubbed in it while he won. I thought it was, go Commonwealth, dude.
I was on top of the road.
And I'm like, what have I got to lose now? My rib's already broken, so I might as well just go for it. If I didn't win, I just wanted to be known as the guy who went completely ballistic.
Look at that! Just going giant. Oh my goodness! Oh my god!
All this mayhem showing us a life gone goofy and then brought back from the brink. And that's it from us. We're kicking the show to the curb. My thanks to Andrew, my extra special thanks to Leslie for joining us today, and thanks to you for watching. We're off to practice our cry stares now, but we'll see you next week.